Thanks so much. Thanks, Pat. thanks for asking me to lead the review. Thanks for the support throughout it. And most importantly, thanks for your leadership on this issue. As you say, it is probably the most significant challenge facing our country today. I'd also like to thank my team who are here today. They've done an absolutely brilliant job of work, of my advisors, for amassing all of the evidence, putting it all together in what I hope is a compelling and pretty comprehensive report. You might have seen that just this morning there were new figures released showing that there are now over 1 million young people in our country not in education, employment or training. It's actually more than a statistic. It's a warning. A warning that far too many young people are reaching adulthood only to find the door to opportunity closed. They're neat. It's an ugly term. But it's a term with ugly consequences too. Aspirations thwarted, confidence drained, futures narrowed before they've properly begun. During the course of this review, over the last few months, I've met, spoken, heard the views of hundreds of young people. Their voices sit at the heart of this report. Behind the statistic lie 1 million individual lives, all different, but with one thing in common. Not one of them wanted to end up being not in education, employment or training. I start with a very simple proposition. When Pat first asked me to do this work, I came to it with this view. Every young person has something to give, a skill, an aptitude, a potential. Every one of them should have an opportunity to learn or to earn. But the NEET rate in our country has barely been below 10% in 25 years. It's one thing to be ignorant about a problem. It's quite another to be neglectful. And I'm sad to say that for far too long in our country, the NEET crisis has been swept under the carpet. Not any longer. This review exists because today Britain faces a genuine generational fault line. We do not just have a chronic problem. It is getting worse, not getting better, and we have neither a system or a plan to deal with it. A decade or more ago, the problem was temporary youth unemployment, and youth unemployment today is still, of course, far too high. But now it is something deeper and far more corrosive. It is youth detachment from the labour market. Nearly 6 in 10 young people who are NEET today are economically inactive. That means they not only don't have a job, they're not looking for a job. 6 in 10 have never had a job. 20 years ago, that figure was closer to 4 in 10. Detachment is no longer temporary. For too many young people, it is becoming permanent. If the current trajectory continues, within 5 years, we forecast in this report that today's 1 in 8 young people who are NEET will climb to 1 in 6. We are at risk of a lost generation. There is much talk, of course, of this being an economic or a fiscal crisis, and indeed it is. The cumulative cost to our country of almost 1 million young people outside of education and work is estimated in my report at £125 billion a year. More than we spend on education. But the principal cost isn't borne by the taxpayer. It's borne by the young person. Being NEET has a long-term scarring impact. Cost to their confidence, cost to their health, cost to their future income. For those who spend the whole period from 18 to 24 years of age outside of education and work, as about a quarter of 24-year-old NEETs do, the lifetime loss can approach £300,000. That is not an abstract number. It's a deposit never saved, a home never bought, a pension never built, the hope of a good life never realised. So this is more than an economic crisis. It's a moral one. So the question today is no longer whether the current position is somehow unfortunate, it's whether it's sustainable. My answer is no, it is not. As a growing older generation becomes increasingly reliant on the next generation to sustain it, every young person has to have more opportunities to learn or earn and to get a job. The problem is that for too many young people, opportunities are not growing, they're shrinking. Reversing that starts with understanding what is driving it in the first place. This is the first of two reports that I'll produce, as Pat was saying. The next, in the autumn, will provide proposed solutions to the NEET crisis. This first problem diagnoses, this first report diagnoses the problem. It contains a huge amount of data analysis, new research, surveys of young people, employers, teachers, health professionals. During the course of this review, we've spoken to countless organisations, disability charities, youth organisations, businesses, schools, colleges, health professionals, councils, mayors, political leaders. I've been around politics and public policy for more decades than I care to remember. I can genuinely say I've never come across an issue as visceral as this with the public. Wherever I've been, whoever I've spoken to, I've come across a deep concern bordering on a fear about the future facing young people. Parents are more worried than ever about their kids. Grandparents, too, about their youngsters' prospects for a job, a home, a decent future. For decades in Britain, the foundation of our unwritten social contract has been that each generation would be able to do better than the last. That great British promise for this generation is being broken. The 1 million young people who are NEET are its leading casualties. They've been hit by a perfect storm. A generation ago, almost 2 in 3 of this age cohort were in work. Today, it's barely 50%. For under-18s in education, the number also holding down a job has halved during that time. Now, there's been much focus about the impact on youth employment of recent policies like the youth minimum wage and the rise in national insurance contributions. Employers repeatedly raised this with me as an issue. And it is true. The changes have had an impact. It's always a risk for an employer to take on a young person precisely because they're unproven. So if public policy wants more young people in work, it has to minimise risks and maximise incentives for employers. But no one should pretend that the structural change that has been taking place in the youth labour market has only recently been triggered. Over the last few decades, Britain has had a jobs boom, but one that has largely passed young people by. Entry-level jobs have long been in sharp decline. Compared to the start of the century, there are 1.6 million fewer low- and medium-skilled jobs in the economy. Vacancies in hospitality have halved in the last 4 years. Saturday jobs have long since been in freefall. Apprenticeship starts amongst young people have fallen by 35% over the last decade. The first rung of the ladder in careers has thinned. For too many young people, it is now simply out of reach. That places them in a hopeless catch-22 position, where employers ask for work experience, but opportunities for young people to gain it have either narrowed or have gone. And by the way, that is before the impact of the AI revolution to come on jobs and workplaces. For decades, falling labour market participation was offset by rising education participation among the young. But in recent years, that too has plateaued and has marginally fallen. The biggest falls have been in further education and apprenticeships, the routes most accessible to the potentially NEET cohort. Fewer opportunities there in education mean more young people ending up being NEET. So none of this is a recent phenomenon. It's a long-term structural change. And yet for too long, public policy has treated youth disengagement mainly as a supply-side problem. Make young people more employable. Raise standards in schools, improve their skills, toughen their benefits. All of these things matter, but they're not enough if the labour market, the demand side, is no longer reliably bringing people in. It's striking that almost one third of today's NEETs have got good GCSEs, 15% have a degree. Being NEET used to be something that happened to other people's children. Now, parents in all parts of the country worry it could be their child. If the NEET problem is to be solved, change will be needed not just on the supply side, but on the demand side too, in labour market policy and in employer practice. Both will be needed because there's also been a fundamental change in the makeup of who is becoming NEET. There is no singular explanation for the NEET problem worsening, but there is one standout change. Over the past decade, the proportion who say they're NEET due to a work-limiting health condition has increased by 70%. The proportion of NEETs citing mental health or conditions like ADHD and autism as their primary condition has more than doubled. For the first time in perhaps two centuries, changes in health, especially in mental health, are impeding economic growth and causing a contraction in the supply of labour. Poor health reduces participation. Reduced participation worsens health. Worsening health makes return to work harder still. This is the vicious cycle that simply isn't being broken. Once health-related inactivity takes hold, it sticks. That's what makes the problem more entrenched than it has ever been before. Of those who fall into health-related economic inactivity, our research suggests that almost 8 in 10 remain neat more than 2 years later. The damage done to the life chances of those young people is almost incalculable. And here, there is an elephant in the room question. How much are young people themselves to blame? Have they become softer, flakier, less resilient, more willing to blame mental health than actually suffer from it? That is not what I found. One of the most striking findings in this review is that 84% of NEET young people that we surveyed said they wanted a job or they wanted to be in training. So I do not accept the caricature of a generation that is not interested in work. This is a generation that wants the chance to work. I do not accept that mental health is simply an excuse. We've drawn on Professor Peter Fonagy's brilliant work on mental health prevalence, which confirms that distress among the young is real and it is rising. I do not accept either that the answer is to tell young people who are struggling simply to try harder. The young people I have met are trying, applying for dozens, sometimes hundreds of jobs, hearing nothing back. And it is silence that does not just dent confidence, it kills hope. There is no shortage of effort on the part of young people. The shortage is of opportunity and of support. Young people today are different. Not worse, not lazier, not less capable. Different. They've grown up in a digital world. They were hard hit by the pandemic. They're more open about mental health. They are more anxious. In a world of greater uncertainty and less opportunity, perhaps that is not so surprising. Every generation is different from the one that went before it. The systems that support them into adulthood have always had to adapt. This time, they have not. That is not a failure of young people. It's a failure of a system stuck in the past. Of course, personal responsibility matters, effort matters, habits matter, families matter. Aspiration cannot be gifted by the state. Young people have obligations, families have responsibilities, parents as well. But it is dishonest to pretend that individual effort alone can overcome systems that are designed to solve yesterday's problem and not today's. My core diagnosis is that the system set up to support young people from the world of education into the world of employment is no longer working. In too many cases, it does not just fail to tackle the problem, it reinforces it. Whether it is education or health or welfare, that system fails to enable their participation in the labour market. Instead, all too often, it ends up putting young people on a path to a life not in jobs, but on benefits. Take education. Good qualifications are still one of the best defences against a young person becoming NEET. But schools, like colleges, are measured overwhelmingly on attainment, not on outcomes. That's how they're recognised, rewarded, regulated. In our survey of teachers, almost three quarters said the curriculum put too much emphasis on passing exams and not enough focus on preparing young people for work. More than two in three of our survey of NEET young people agreed. Only 3% of employers who recruited 16-year-olds cite a lack of literacy or numeracy skills as being the problem. They point instead to a shortage of attributes: communication skills, collaboration skills, agility, adaptability. Today's workplace needs those skills. Tomorrow's, even more so. Ensuring fewer young people leave school at risk of becoming NEET depends on getting the right balance in the school curriculum and the right exposure to work experience and to careers guidance. Today, the UK has amongst the lowest levels of school work experience internationally. When employers constantly tell us that this generation is not work ready, it's obvious that balance, despite welcome government reforms, is still not right. Similarly, the NHS. It categorises young people as being unfit to work, not least through the GP FitNo process, when with help, support and early intervention, they would be able to do so. The health system, frankly, doesn't see it as its role to help them into work. Instead, a health diagnosis becomes a gateway into a life on benefits and outside the labour market. Yet as tens of thousands of disabled people prove every single day, it's entirely possible to have a diagnosis and a disability and still be able to participate, providing, of course, you get the right support. Welfare. The welfare system must always protect those who cannot work. It must always be there to provide financial security for people with severe or enduring disabilities. That is non-negotiable. But for young people who could participate, the welfare system should be supporting them to do so. Today, it is not. It is focused more on income replacement than helping young people into work. Our analysis shows that for every £25 we spend on benefits for young people, we invest only £1 in employment support for them to get a job. Frankly, that is shocking and it is shameful. Not least when almost half of the young people claiming health or disability benefits believe they could work now with the right support or in the future if their health improves. The welfare system is founded on a deficit model of disability, one that pays for what a young person cannot do rather than investing in what they could become. It is sucking more people in and keeping them there for longer. If current trends persist, we forecast that 1 in 20 of all today's five-year-olds will be on incapacity benefit by the time that they are aged 22. That speaks to two things, of course, for welfare reform, but also for far earlier interventions in the system. The welfare system does not have increased labour market participation among young people as a core objective. Analysis for this review shows that only around 1 in 5 young people who are NEET are getting meaningful employment support from the welfare system. £8.1 billion is being spent on key benefits for young people. Across disability, incapacity and unemployment benefit, less than half of that spend has any participation support or requirements attached to it. The system writes young people a cheque, but it doesn't help them build a plan. These fault lines mean more and more young people are being trapped on benefits for longer and longer. The numbers leaving the benefit system 5 years after first claiming a health or disability benefit have fallen by 40% in just a decade. Today, around 7 in 10 young people first claiming a health and disability benefit are still claiming a decade later. Too many of those who could work and want to do so are not being helped. Perhaps unsurprisingly, their employment prospects are not only poor, they're deteriorating. New research we've undertaken, for example, shows that just 1 in 4 people receiving PIP at age 24 are in work. In a decade, there has been an increase of over one-third in those first claiming health and disability benefits and being NEET 5 years later. Today, of those who first claimed a health and disability benefit aged 16 to 24, almost half are not in work or education 15 years later. 15 years. That is a catastrophic failure. The truth is, for decades across the system, education, health, welfare, we have been spending billions managing failure and pennies preventing it. Becoming NEET doesn't start at the age of 16. You know, a child who is not school ready at the age of 4 or 5 is 3 times more likely to be NEET at the age of 16 or 17. And yet our analysis shows that over very many years, decades, prevention has been cut at every level. Early years, public health, youth services, further education. What has grown is crisis spending, late intervention and income replacement. The tragedy is that we're paying more to manage the consequences of youth disengagement than being prepared to invest in preventing it. We end up spending more to achieve less. Worse outcomes, but higher costs. It's obvious from this assessment that reform is long overdue. In education, skills, health, labour market and welfare, there is much focus on the latter, and rightly so. But welfare reform without wider state reform will not deliver the goods for this generation. The same is true for labour market reform. It is a whole system reset that is now needed. Today, responsibility for helping young people from education into employment is dispersed across a bewildering array of organisations. Each institution optimises for its own metrics. There is no shared accountability. There is no clear governing philosophy. Confusion reigns between what happens nationally and what is owned locally. Data is not shared. No amount of reform to individual policy areas or to institutions will fix this. The architecture itself is the problem. It is young people who fall through these structural fault lines. You know, one of the most troubling findings of this review is how many are hidden from the very system meant to help them. In England alone, in 2023-24, around 314,000 18 to 24-year-olds were neither in work nor in education and were not claiming benefits. A system serious about participation would know who these young people are and would do something to help them. Ours do not. They're out of work, out of sight, frankly, they're out of mind. This is a whole system failure. Now, the government has made a start in trying to reset it. The work that Pat is leading, the Youth Guarantee, is enormously welcome. Apprenticeship reforms are welcome. The focus on school attendance, SEND reform, work experience, and the post-16 skills system, these are all positive steps in the right direction. The same is true of the recognition in the 10-year health plan that economic activity and improvements in health, mental health particularly, have to be addressed simultaneously. So too, the government's youth strategy. Each of these are serious steps. They deserve acknowledgement. But no one should pretend they're enough, either in scale or design. There is no glue that binds them together, no shared objectives, no shared incentives, no shared accountabilities, no one to join the dots. If ever there was a case for mission-based government, this is it. It's not a new programme that is needed. Down the years, we've had no shortage of those. YDS, New Deal, Future Jobs Fund, Youth Contract, traineeships, kickstarts. This is not a record of passivity. It is a record of sustained policy effort. But here's the hard truth. Despite all that effort, the problem not only persists, it's getting worse. Why? Because new initiatives laid on top of a system that is broken cannot work. It is not a new programme that is needed. It's a new approach. From a welfare state that is exacerbating inactivity to a working state that builds opportunity. The old welfare state was built for a different age. Its great historic mission was to protect people against unemployment, sickness and poverty. That mission, of course, remains vital. A decent country must always protect those who cannot work. But for this generation, protection is not enough. For young people who can participate with the right support, the system has to be more than a safety net. It has to be a springboard. The working state has to be powered by multiple levers, as much by education and health change, as labour market and as welfare change, as much by employers as by governments. Because this is more than about policy. It's about the kind of country that we want to be. It sometimes feels, when I look at it, that there aren't many causes left in modern British politics. But this is one. The scale and impact of this problem can no longer be ignored. We cannot throw a whole generation of young people on the scrap heap before their adult lives have properly begun. The change cannot simply be about saving money. It has to be about saving and improving life chances. It's not about yet more iterative reform. It's about a fundamental system reset. In the end, politics, as we know, is about choices. Over two decades ago, politics made it the choice to end pensioner poverty and to halve child poverty. Today, the choice has to be to make the next generation the focus of our politics, our efforts, our resources. Building a better future for the next generation can be the cause around which the whole country can unite. Not just government, but employers and educators, local leaders and local charities, parents and communities, Our country's future relies on the next generation. It is the job of this generation to ensure that every young person in the next generation, regardless of their background or their circumstances, has more opportunity to learn or to earn. This, in my view, should be the priority for government. More importantly, it should be the priority for us all. Thank you very much.